Hello again, everyone. This is PWT Talks NXT. I am Kelly Wells, your host. On the torch, I write the NXT tracker, every now and then, a couple of months, and I host this show. We're going to talk about today's show, which obviously was headlined by Gargano and Almas, and we've actually got the full slate of guys here. There isn't a lot to talk about, but we all happen to be available, and we're just going to do a little bit of a roundtable here for what ended up being obviously a very important week of NXT. Justin James, go ahead and introduce yourself.
I'm Justin James, PWT's NXT TV correspondent, and I'm here to talk to you tonight about tonight's episode.
We also have Harley Padgett with us.
Hello, my name is Harley R. Padgett. I write the weekly Ring of Honor television reports for The Torch, and I co-host the VIP podcast Talking Honor, where we discuss the week in Ring of Honor news.
And rounding out the cast, we also have Tom Staupe.
Indeed, Tom Staupe. I cover the NXT and MLW tapings in Orlando. And if you want to dig back and see where I totally called that Corey and Booker were working us, you can follow me on Twitter at Tom Staupe.
Ooh, look at this guy. smart to the business. Wow. I thought it was real until now. It was this that finally pushed me over the edge.
My only issue with it is that it didn't accomplish what I thought was the goal of promoting Booker's podcast now that he doesn't have a weekly gig anymore. But anyway.
Oh, well. They tried. They did a thing. They worked us. There's professional pride. Probably. I'm sure they got that going.
They did a thing. Probably the best way to sum it up.
They sure did. It existed. I'll give it that. You can get a hold of us at pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. That is pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. If you want to ask us any questions, we will tackle those at the end of the show. We only have one question this week, but I dare say it is a good one. I'm actually still torn about how I feel about the answer, which is a sign that it's a very good question. But we'll get to that. We are going to go ahead and start with the main event of this week, which was Johnny Gargano against Andrade Cien Almas for the fourth time. And this time it was a loser gets promoted match. Almas puts his championship on the line and once again finds a way, successfully defends against Gargano in a match that begs the question if Ciampa is going to interfere in all of Gargano's matches, why didn't they maybe safeguard against that? I guess that's a question you guys can cover here as well. Justin, go ahead and start. I guess we don't have to start with Justin. Harley, go ahead and start.
Okay. Yeah, the things I liked about the match itself, I'm a huge fan of callbacks in general. So all the callbacks to the previous matches, the various counters and reversals, that's just good storytelling. All of those I especially loved. I definitely had the same thought as you, Kelly, which was how did Johnny not foresee Tommaso being involved. I mean, granted, okay, at TakeOver, Tommaso didn't factor into the finish, right? He showed up after the match was all over and everything was said and done. So there's a bit of plausible deniability there. But at the same time, I mean, they expected Zelina, so he had Candice at ringside, not having any sort of safeguard for Ciampa, not asking Regal to ban him from ringside, something as simple as that, does make him look a little bit foolish, especially when the stakes were so high.
Yeah, okay, so they did the stuff with Candice and Zelina, and I thought wisely got that out of the way quickly, because you couldn't have the story be about them again, so you might as well establish them, get them a little bit of screen time, and then get them out of the way, and then you can tell a relatively new story. As far as the match they did, it was another very good match. These guys, so crisp, so clean, so good in the ring both, and so committed to their babyface and heel acts. And we got the ref bump, because once you're too many matches in, obviously you've got to check that box as well. And of course,
and that was well done. I liked I flash back to the glory days of WWE when there's a ref bump 4 times per night. Oh, yeah. And, you know, somebody would get gently pushed and they'd be out cold for 10 minutes. Here he took a full backhand to the face. So that was pretty believable, I thought.
Yeah, I really bought it. And always nice to have a legit ref in there. I mean, you got Drake Younger in there. You know he knows how to take a bump. So this is the ideal guy to be calling a match if you want to have a ref bump, because Drake knows how to take a bump because he was a hardcore CZW. I think he was in CZW wrestler before this. So yeah, definitely the right guy to call this match, and the right guy to call this match anyway, because he's just a damn good referee, and I buy into what he does. Yeah, another good match, much shorter, of course, than their takeover match. Justin, were you muted? Do I have you back?
I was muted. Yeah, I was reaching for unmute. So I really like this match. I agree. Why in the world did Gargano not ask for, you know, Vega to be banned from ringside? Though it fit in with him, you know, the way this match got booked in the first place, with him being a hothead, you know, that kind of spurred the moment. You know, nobody was really thinking about stipulations other than, you know, what do we have to do to get this match? You want me gone? If I lose, fine, I'll do it. Having LeRae there, of course, made perfect sense, and she was so pitch perfect in her part. Although I hate to say this, my kid pointed this out before it hit me. He says, "What happened to LeRae and Vega? Where are they?" And then when Vega came back to celebrate at the end, my kid's like, "What's Vega doing there? Wasn't Candice LeRae beating her halfway to the parking lot?"
Yeah, right.
Like, I was like, yeah. He says, shouldn't she be bleeding? I mean, she's not a wrestler, and LeRae is. Shouldn't she be bleeding or be hurt?
I think it wouldn't be a bad idea for WWE to hire a kid or two. Like, just have a kid on hand and say, what did you notice? Because the kid who buys in completely is going to point out stuff that that adults who are too jaded and too smart to the business don't even notice.
I was like, of course Vega's going to be back. My kid's like, this makes no sense. Why is Vega back?
From the mouths of babes. I really like that. I actually agree with the idea of having a kid on hand.
Yeah, it was just totally discontinuous. It just didn't line up. But outside of that, I mean, the match action and, you know, obviously this match could have gone 3 ways. You know, you had the Ciampa interference, which is what we got. You had Gargano winning. You had Almas winning. All three would have been perfectly viable outcomes. I'm not a fan of ref bumps, but like you guys said, I like the way the ref bump was handled, and it felt fluid and didn't feel lame. We weren't like, okay, he got, you know, kicked in the shins. Why is he out for 5 minutes? You know, it was a stiff shot to the face that I'd say, okay, the ref's out cold. And I did like that. And I'll say this. I thought it was fitting that we had a Dusty finish on the night that they announced the Dusty Classic.
Let's not get too far ahead of ourselves. We will cover that. Do you think that this was a... Is there an out? Like, are they going to finish this Gargano-Ciampa storyline? Because that, to me, was the biggest reason to say, well, Johnny can't go away yet. More than anything else, the fact that, obviously, he just started his act with LeRae, and, like, what does Candice do? I think that's a viable question. But what becomes of his feud with Ciampa? Do they just keep these guys separate until Ciampa goes up? What do you think of that?
I can't call it. I mean, I think that what we want to see is Ciampa and Gargano at TakeOver New Orleans. I think that's what we want to see.
Sure.
But I will not be upset at all if what we get is Ciampa and Gargano at WrestleMania.
Oh, yeah. I've got no complaints against that. I don't know that it would make the main show, but I would absolutely love for that to be there, and the feud itself warrants it. Tom, go ahead and unpack all this for us.
I guess we're kind of thinking Gargano to 205, right? That's pretty much the prevailing theory.
I'd have to go.
Be a shocker go that to way. Me. I also could see him on SmackDown, but yeah, 205 probably.
I can't see Vince being too interested in him. Just Vince being.
Yeah.
Vince.
And clearly Triple H is, and with right. the current Triple H influence in 205, the question for me is when as opposed to how, because right now they're so focused on that tournament, and as of right now, I guess on the most recent episode, they did do a tag match in between quarterfinals, whatever, the two tournament matches that they did. But there isn't much room on the show for anything else right now, let alone a build to a Mania match. As far as Ciampa, my guess would be that he's just going to follow Gargano up and just sort of be like a, maybe he's not officially on the roster, but he'll have to get signed because Gargano just absolutely has to have a match with him. And Drake Maverick will have no choice but to sign this guy because Gargano just needs to hash it out with him in the ring.
They did that with Sammy and Kevin, right? They wrapped up their feud in NXT, but then they picked it up again when Sammy showed up on Raw.
Actually, yeah. I was thinking about them just because KO went up. I don't want to say prematurely, but he went up at a time where he was still cooking in NXT, and he was just on such a roll that he could not be ignored. They had to get this guy on the main roster. And I kind of feel like that's what's happened with Johnny, that he just could not be ignored anymore. Not that, I don't know, I dwell on my own terminology so much. Ignored probably isn't what was happening, you know, but they're so eager to get this guy on a bigger platform. And yeah, so absolutely, that definitely crossed my mind. I think it's pretty similar to that. And we've talked about how Johnny's trajectory has echoed at least Sammy to a certain extent as well in the past. I also love the child anecdotes. My daughter sort of expressed being a little bit smart to the business for the first time ever when I told her what the stipulation for the match. Johnny will have to leave NXT if he loses. And her first reaction, I expected her to be devastated. Her first reaction was, oh, well, he'll just go to Raw or SmackDown, right? And I said, well,
my kid said that too.
Yeah. Okay. Proper raising here. And then I said, well, maybe he'll go to 205 Live. And she pauses and looks at me and goes, what's that?
Oh boy.
So yeah. Anyway, I wouldn't want to disregard what I thought was an incredible opening video package. I think we all pretty much presumed, and I know there were rumors out there. I did an okay job of avoiding them, at least anything super specific. But I feel like we all pretty much thought that Johnny was not going to win this, if only for the fact that if there's a title change after what happened with Asuka relinquishing the title, and after what happened with what was the other thing, that the War Games announcement. It's like when something major like that happens at a taping.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, they tried to get ahead of the dirt sheets and report it before it actually happens on the show.
Yeah, this was the third episode, I want to say, from Atlanta. So I felt strongly that I would have already known one way or another that this was going to come. So,
right.
Yeah.
Right. So, even though I had that in mind, this video package and its focus on Andrade's journey from coming into NXT, they breezed over that real quick at the beginning, to going through a slump and tying up with Vega and becoming champion and feuding with Johnny, or feuding with Johnny, becoming champion, and then continuing feuding with Johnny. They focused so much on it, and it was such a good package that it gave me just that tiny little sliver of doubt that I thought was really, really effective. I was super ready to just completely invest in this match. I felt the emotions welling up when the lights went down and they announced that it was for the title and their counterparts were standing there in the ring with them and everything. I thought the juxtaposition between the two was great. I mean, when was the last time we saw a feud that was this good, that was so one-sided, where one competitor just kept winning? I mean, maybe Sammy Neville?
Edge and Christian versus everybody in the ladder versus matches. Everybody. I mean, that's really it.
That's actually a really good example. And the match was, I mean, it was good. And especially for a fourth encounter, like you said, it's got to get a little schmozzy because we've seen everything else these guys can do. And they got right into it. And I didn't have a problem with it, but I definitely think we're going to look back on it as the lesser of the four that they had. Almost just circumstantially. I don't feel like there was anything wrong with it, but it kind of just hit all the beats that I thought it was going to hit, and I didn't really, it didn't give me too much more to say beyond that. I was just, I sort of ended the night like, okay, yep, that's what I thought was going to happen, and that was pretty much it. Did you guys have any further thoughts on it?
Well, I think it kind of played in front of a gassed crowd, and that always takes a little bit of the luster off, even if you're watching at home. I think we all agree it's just way more fun to watch a crowd that is super into it. And it took them some time to get into it, which is a bummer because it's like these people know how good a match these two guys had at TakeOver, but you can't help but be somewhat gassed by the time you get to that third or fourth show of the taping. So
yeah,
I don't know. And maybe, you know, I know there's also an attitude when you go to a show that's not a pay-per-view, you don't, at least I don't, buy into the idea that any title will change hands. Right. And it takes me a while to get into a match as a result. And I think we talked about this just last week where they buy in. Yeah, Justin and I were talking about this when he said, it's a real testament to a match when you put your booker's hat on and you're 100% sure of something, and then all of a sudden the match is so good that they make you believe, even though you know that those bookers couldn't have been aside in that room making that decision. And that's kind of, yeah, that's, so I think it took some time. And the fans did get into it. We got our, I say dueling chance, but it was 85%, Johnny, as I thought it probably should be. But yeah, great match, and I'm bullish on the future of these two guys. I'm actually more bullish on the fact on the career of Almas, which I wouldn't have said a while ago, but the Almas Vega act is just absolutely perfect. It'll be interesting to see where Candace fits into all this. I did want to say I wasn't a fan of the Mrs. Johnny wrestling shirt that she wore. I just felt like we can do better than that. I don't know. I thought that was a little bit.
I didn't notice it. Was it a custom job?
Yeah, it was. You know, it's funny because I almost put that in my report, right? Like there's this thing, right, where it's on the same. It's like you no longer Mrs. Justin James. Right. You know, you're not your husband's wife anymore.
Well, I guess it sounds like she probably just took his existing shirt and added a word to it.
Yeah, she did. But it was just one of those things where it was just, I got it was cutesy, but, you know, I know we sometimes bring social issues into the show, but, you know.
Yeah, we're giving away our progressive nature here a little bit. But I just didn't love it.
I get the feeling it was probably a one-night thing, though, kind of because it's his send-off. It's his big exit.
Yeah.
It was one of those things that where I kind of noted, but I didn't feel like saying anything about it. You know what I mean? I also did, you know, there was something in here, right, where what I don't like is, I don't know, I'll come back to it if I think of it, I guess.
Okay. Well, I'll tell you what. What I'm going to do is I'm going to give you a task, but there's a catch. Select a wine you're going to love, and it has to be one you haven't tried before. Where do you start? Myself, I know I tend to prefer Argentinian Malbec, but beyond that, I'm honestly not sure what differentiates Malbec I love from one I probably won't try again. This is where Wink comes in. That's Wink spelled W-I-N-C. Wink makes it easy to discover great wine you will love. Their experts make selections matched to your taste and personalized for you and ship them straight to your door. This is the best day of your month, starting at just $13 a bottle. Just fill out Wink's palate profile quiz, where you'll answer simple questions like, how do you take your coffee? Or do you like blueberries? Wink then sends you wines curated to your taste, and the more wines you rate, the more personalized your selections will become, kind of like Wine Netflix. Each month, there are new delicious wines like the insanely popular Summer Water Rosé. And the service is out of this world. There are no membership fees, you can skip any month, and you can cancel any time. Shipping is covered, and if you don't like a bottle, they'll replace it with one you love, no questions asked. As a PWT Talks NXT listener, you can discover great wine today. Go to trywink.com/PWTorch, and you'll get $20 off your first shipment. That's trywink.com/PWTorch for $20 off. trywink.com/PWTorch. Do it. And you know what? Tell us about it. Tweet me your favorites. I want to know what wines you're trying.
We know you're a pro wrestling fan, but you might like MMA too. And if so, check out our sister site, MMATorch.com, with live fight event coverage, including UFC pay-per-views, previews of all UFC and Bellator events, the daily news digest, exclusive columns, flashbacks, and much more. Check it out. If you're a fan of MMA, you'll be a fan of MMATorch.com.
All right. Well, I think we got to break out the wine and celebrate because we just got the announcement of the next Dusty Classic. We didn't have one in 2017. We had them in 15, a fantastic one in 15, a passable one in 16 that furthered a couple of storylines, and now we're about to get one in 2018. So this one does have the added wrinkle of being for the number one contendership, which... it's a win or lose. It's a win lose thing because the Royal Rumble, it's awesome. But once it became a match that determined the number one contender at WrestleMania, you knew that the number of guys who could win it shrunk a lot. So it took a lot of the luster off the match just because, well, it gave it more stakes, but it took out 26 names that were absolutely not going to win it. That's kind of that could happen with this tournament. We don't have the brackets. We don't know even how many teams are going to do it this time. I believe it was 16 both times. I'm sure it was 16 the first time. I think it was 16 the second time. But yeah, we're going to get the tournament. And I think they said in 2 weeks they will give us the bracket, or 2 weeks that they would start the tournament. One of those. So
yeah,
on the Dusty Classic. Harley, go ahead. What do you think?
Yeah, I like that they're bringing it back. I think the first two happened like October, November in the late fall. So I think this one just got bumped due to the Mae Young Classic happening late last year. I like that. I actually like that it's for a number one contendership rather than just a trophy. I like there to be, you know, and it makes it seem like whoever gets to face Fish and O'Reilly at TakeOver New Orleans, they've really earned their way onto WrestleMania weekend. The interesting thing for me, when they didn't give us brackets, but I think Nigel McGuinness was running through some of the teams that we could expect to be in it, and he listed the Authors of Pain. So NXT is not rid of them yet. They are still hanging around. At this point, my money's on TM61. They've been positioned pretty strong lately. I feel like they're more polished in ring than your Street Profits, your Heavy Machinery. So I'm thinking it's them going to the end.
Yeah, I'm going to go ahead and agree with that. I like what they've done with these guys. I like that they came back with a more casual, realistic... it seems like they're being themselves. Obviously, we don't know, but it sure seems like they're just being themselves in there. And I get the feeling that this has helped them a lot. And I, right now, would be surprised if it weren't them, but it could be the Street Profits, and Heavy Machinery is kind of a way outside group. We could see a lot of things. I do think with the announcement of this, I wouldn't be surprised if the Sabatelli Moss thing wasn't quite over. Like, maybe they'll officially, finally break up in this tournament. We could see some of that.
Hasn't every Dusty tournament involved one team turning on each other?
One team splitting. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You had Rude and Ty, you had... we had Aries and Strong, but that really didn't count as a turn. It was just Aries got hurt.
And then we got, well, and of course the winners of the first one were Finn and Joe, and they began a feud right after. Justin, any other extra calls on this one?
I love the Dusty Classic. NXT starting to develop certain traditions. The Dusty Classic has been one of them, and I've always enjoyed it. I just think it's a fun thing, and I'm looking forward to it a lot. I think that, you know, you look at the brackets, and you know, it could be anyone's game, and you usually see, in addition to some tag teams, you see a couple singles pairing up, so, I don't know, we'll get an odd couple, like Velveteen Dream and Aleister Black, you know, or something like that, who knows. I'm looking forward to it. I like the classic. It fills up a lot of TV time and helps build and set up at least two matches going into our WrestleMania weekend takeover, in this case, New Orleans.
Yeah, for me, you can never have too many tournaments. Like, I will watch every second of every one they put on screen, and it seems like they're catching on to that because they've been throwing tournaments at us hard the last couple of years. Tom, on the tournament.
Do we remember how many tapings it took to film a Dusty Classic the last two times they've done it? I don't remember.
I don't know. In the first one, I know a lot of the matches actually happened at house shows and things like that, that they ended up...
Oh, that's right. That's right.
Like, Dash and Dawson had their first big win, like, even on TV, at a house show, and they were just like, oh, by the way, Dash and Dawson won. I was like, they haven't won any matches on TV. Like,
Okay, we have not seen that. I will guess that that's probably what they're going to do with this one as well, because there's only one taping left between now and the next takeover.
If it's eight teams, they could do it. But if it's 16 teams, there's going to have to be a lot of... Yeah, they're going to have
to... Yeah, and they're going to have to throw some teams at us, too. I like you guys' analysis of the different teams. I think TM61 is definitely a favorite going in. I would say War Machine is an outside wild card. Yeah, if they decide to throw them in. I agree with the positioning of Heavy Machinery and Moss and Sabatelli. That was my exact thought as well, is that maybe they're not over with, and maybe they'll do a little Blake and Murphy thing during this tournament. Maybe get past the first round or I don't know. We'll see. I like that they're not cementing it to a certain time of the year, too, because just for myself, I was so focused on the Mae Young Classic around the time of year that they normally would have done this that I didn't. It was on my mind. I was like, man, they're probably going to bring that Dusty Classic back, and I'm not ready for it right now. I don't want it right now. I'm so focused on this other tournament. So I like that they're dropping it now. And I think you guys pretty much covered it. I agree with a lot of what you said. I guess I just wanted to reiterate it and add War Machine into the mix.
Sure. All right. Yes, War Machine, also somebody that I did not think of and should have, because I watch New Japan and I followed them there, and I'm eager to see if they use them, and if they use them, what happens. They're going to have to do War Machine, Heavy Machinery. For the rights to the word machine, I assume is what that's going to be. Like, is Heavy Machine... I still wonder if Heavy Machinery is going to be forced to change their name.
It's the first ever Heavy War match.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, I guess I almost feel like we need to change the name of our show to the AOP Call-Up Watch. When their name got mentioned, I thought, like, oh, did he just mention them because they're still technically around, or did that just slip by? And then Paul Ellering tweeted out like, oh, we're going to win it again. And so
when did we start thinking they were gone? Like November?
After War Games.
That sounds about right.
Of what year?
That's right. Well, like, when they lost the championships, I was like, oh, they're getting their call up.
Yep.
Oh, and then they show up for War Games, they're like, they're getting their call up.
Oh, yeah, before that, it was like...
I know the timing's got to be right for them. They've got to be able to go up when they're able to beat a bunch of teams. Like, because they can fill 6 weeks beating jobbers, and that's fine. So, but after 6 weeks of beating jobbers, you have to beat somebody. I mean, there's Breezango, and you can beat them. There's Titus Worldwide, and you can beat them. Right. But... how long before they have to take a loss? And once they lose a match, the luster's off. So I don't know. And right now,
that's where Bludgeon Brothers are.
Yeah, and right now they're finally able to move up Revival, and then so you've got Revival as a heel team getting their proper push on Raw finally, and then the Bludgeon Brothers are basically, in many ways, the same team as AOP getting that push and still in the early stages, more or less, 2.0 on SmackDown. So timing's got to be everything for them. I'm sure they're frustrated as hell, but if they bring them up at the wrong time, they're just going to be an also-ran. They're going to be another Ascension, and we don't want to see that for these guys because I feel like they have so much more potential than the Ascension.
Yeah, fantastic point. And my exact thought was that perhaps we haven't seen them just because they don't have anything for them right now, and they want to wait until that timing is right. So I guess for now I readjust until Raw after Mania.
Yeah, they'll be drafted.
Yeah. So, yeah, if they don't have them come up and beat a bunch of jobbers, I actually think that they are the kind of act that might benefit from coming up and doing the Page treatment where you just come up and win the title. And that way you're established and you don't have to go through all that. And then even if you end up losing the title 2-3 months down from then, you're already super established. It might be the right way to treat them. I'm not sure. Let's go ahead and talk about, I mean, not really one of the other matches, but I do want to talk about Nikki Cross. So Nikki Cross versus Vanessa Bourne. Nikki, of course, won in a squash match, more or less a squash match. Vanessa Bourne, I think, is okay. Maybe she'll get there, maybe not. That's not what I want to talk about. What I want to talk about is, where does Nikki fit in to this takeover? Because we have seen over the last year or two that if you are not Asuka and the women's champion, you really don't win any matches on TV almost ever. So it just feels like there's no room for that other person. It seems like we're going to do Baszler and Ember at TakeOver. But I guess my question is there any chance we are going to get yet another four-way women's match? Am I crazy? Tom, go ahead.
You know, that had been my thought previously, because it we'll see how things shake out over the next couple weeks, I think. I think the next 2 weeks will really help us answer this question. But a couple weeks ago, I was thinking, yes, this show tonight, it wasn't, I mean, it arguably a squash, but not really a squash, more of like a babyface comeback thing that happened really quickly. Bourne actually got a lot more heat on her. They even showed her full entrance, so I don't know if I've ever even seen that before. But the main thing that stood out to me was that they used this little babyface comeback match for her to highlight Killian Dane's feud, saying like, oh, hey, here's this. It's not Killian Dane wrestling, but here's this other person that's associated with him, and we're going to use this match to talk about Dane versus Black. So that kind of made me think that Nikki isn't factoring into anything, at least in the next 2 months.
Yeah, and then it's kind of upsetting that she could possibly be an accessory, but her time will come. Her time will come. If she has to take 2 months off from having her time, then whatever. But
I would agree with that. I honestly see her, a completely different character, but I see her popularity in NXT being, is it, dare I say, Bayley level? I mean, that's kind of what I see. Like, everybody likes her. I think it's very difficult not to enjoy Nikki Cross if you watch her long enough. Yeah, and I feel like if they give her enough to work with over a greater period of time, then she could become like their new Bayley. Again, completely different character, but that kind of person to build the division around.
It seems like the pricks who like to cheer for all the heels also have a hard time cheering against Nikki Cross, which is ideally what you want.
Right.
Because, yeah, if you take out that variable, then you've got gold, because everybody wants to cheer on that person, and that's where she is. She got over before she got really, really good in the ring, and now she's also pretty good in the ring, and man, I hope that they don't mishandle her, because everything came together. Timing was right. I don't know when she goes up, and on this show, it's pointless for us to make predictions, but Harley, go ahead.
So the big takeaway for me tonight, she was referred to multiple times as Sanity's Nikki Cross. Still, even though we haven't seen her together with the guys in a while now, I feel like. I don't remember the last time we've seen the four-pack together. They've been around without her. She's been around without them. She was crazy over tonight. I feel like she got cheered. Honestly, I think it was louder during her match than it was during the main event, which is very baffling. But she's so directionless. She's entering like Roderick Strong territory now, where she's popular, but they don't do anything with her. She keeps getting left off every takeover. Going to the last takeover, I thought they were going to do her and Ember, and then they went to Ember and Shane instead. I still have the feeling right now that we're getting a triple threat in New Orleans with Ember, Kairi, and Shayna, and Nikki's going to be left in the dust again. I don't know really if they have plans with, and she's so tough because I guess she's a babyface now, but who do you put her up against besides Shayna? There's no other strong heels, right? I don't know. The only other thing I have to note is tonight's win took Nikki's NXT record to an even 500. 5 wins, 5 losses, and 1 no contest. She is right in the middle of – yeah, she's just right in the middle there.
Yeah, I remember you – pointing out that there were very, very few women with a winning record last year.
Vanessa Bourne was until tonight. She just dropped below 500.
Oh, no.
Bourne's now at 2-3.
2-3? Okay. Well, she's getting TV time, and that's where it's at. Vanessa Bourne is a familiar face to me. She was actually a Suns cheerleader while I was in Arizona, so I remember her from there. Didn't know that I would be seeing her in wrestling. Justin, anything on Nikki Cross?
I enjoy Nikki Cross a lot. She's just one of those people that, you know, she's just gone all in on this character like Velveteen Dream, and you enjoy it for what it is. Even if you don't necessarily like the character, you enjoy the work that's being done. And I think that's what people cheer with Nikki Cross. And you're right, yeah, I mean, she's gotten much better in the ring. Her character was over before that. Is she Bailey level? Maybe. Bailey had a couple things going for her, especially the bring up children again. That relationship with Izzy in the audience, you know, just made Bailey so lovable.
Izzy did dress up as Nikki at a recent taping.
Did she? I didn't notice that.
There's your tip off. There's the brass ring right there.
Mentioned that she did that before, but I haven't. Yeah, that never made TV, unfortunately. I would have loved to have seen that.
Yeah, that's very cool. Izzy, the most interesting fan since Tie-Dye Guy.
Right. There are a lot of regulars in the crowd right now, and I love seeing all of them and just seeing who they cheer for and against, who they can't stand. Like a long hair rocker guy just is so desperate to get the Ascension a big push. He just wants it so bad, and it's not happening.
Yeah, so I mean, I like Nikki Cross a lot. I think she's got great prospects. I think of Sanity, her and Killian Dane seem to have the best long-term prospects.
Yeah, I actually almost brought this up a minute ago, but I really think, even outside of the other guys, that Dane Cross could be a really fun two-person dynamic. Just because they're both so weird. So if they end up just doing a couple of them, I wouldn't be against seeing this dynamic. I would have liked more, even within groups like this, when wrestling's at its best, you'll see pairs and things like that that have their special dynamics, and I would love to see that kind of crazy dynamic where these two are always watching each other's backs even more. I don't know what it is about these two. I just think they would both benefit from that kind of special relationship within a relationship. Because Young doesn't need it. He's over. He's crazy, and he does his thing. And Wolf just isn't quite on that level yet. So I don't know. I just feel like I'd like to see something with them, even if they end up going up. But yeah, I just thought Nikki's situation was worth talking about because we see her win, but where is it headed? And was it really only because of Killian Dane? Our other match on this show was No Way Jose versus Velveteen Dream. Welcome back, No Way Jose. Good to see you beat one or two jobbers before you lost a foregone conclusion. Like, he didn't even get that much offense. He got a little bit, but he was very much an also-ran in this match. This was all about Dream getting his mic time, got his time in the ring. We were talking about it before the show. He always wears something different. He always has different taunts. Man, if you... I'm curious to see whether this is something he can keep up. If he goes to the main roster, he'll be wrestling four times a week between house shows and TV or whatever it is. And will how long does it take to start falling into habits? Because we see wrestlers fall into habits and just do their work and not give you something new. Or you see guys like AJ Styles who rip off something new in damn near every match, are at least presented in a new way. So I don't know if what he's doing is sustainable because he's so goddamn good right now. But yeah, Dream obviously goes over. I almost wanted to do a prospect watch on No Way Jose before I had all you guys here and realized that could take some time. But I don't know where either of these guys go from here, but I'm curious to see if you guys have any thoughts on why this match even existed.
You love pro wrestling podcasts, but you might not have time to listen to all of them. We'll help you decide which ones to listen to and keep you up to date on the ones you're missing at pwpodcasts.com. That website features written recaps of all of the top pro wrestling related podcasts, including Steve Austin, Bruce Pritchard, Edge and Christian, and so on. Check it out. It's pwpodcasts.com, your home for written recaps of all pro wrestling personality hosted podcasts.
Harley, go ahead.
Well, last week it was implied that Dream's heading into a feud with Tyler Bate, so I guess it's just a victory to send him on that way. I feel like Jose's in full Adam Rose territory now, where I don't think he's ever going to get a serious win, but hey, maybe he'll still be popular with a certain, with the people who like to dance, I guess.
Dancing keeps you over, apparently over enough.
Yeah, Summer Rae and Rosa Mendez aren't under contract anymore, so I don't know who they get to be his dance partner, but I'm sure they can dig up somebody. Right. Maybe hire Cameron again.
I guess anything's possible.
Beyond that, the big thing for me was Velveteen got immensely cheered in this match. He got consistent chants. It's not just us who love him. Everybody loves him.
I wanted to know if you guys would bring this up because the announcers brought it up. And that I thought was extremely interesting. The announcers brought it up and then Dream himself brought it up. So I was just like, are they doing a test? Because for a second I thought he was going to say, you're cheering me, blah, blah, blah. And by the way, you all suck and I don't need you and everything like that. But he didn't do that.
Yeah, he didn't rail onto the fans.
But that's not his character. His character wants to be cheered. His character wants to be recognized.
I just thought it was interesting. I think they're in such a weird crossroads with him because they have the best heel. God, one of the best heel acts in the business, but it's just so good and so perfect in every way that we as pro wrestling fans just eat this act up, and I feel like they don't know what's the right thing to do with him.
Yeah,
and
who can he face at New Orleans if they want him to stay heel?
Yeah,
is there anybody?
Johnny Gargano.
Yeah.
Too late.
I would say Aleister Black. They've already done that, and that's as close as they could get.
That's what made him a babyface, was facing Aleister Black.
It was. Yeah, he got cheered at the beginning of that match, but by the end, everybody was like, okay, well, that was one of the best matches ever. So, I don't know. I think if they want to keep him heel, honestly, the thing they have to do is move him up. But I don't know how long that's going to be. I wouldn't be overly stunned I wouldn't have said this a couple months ago, but I wouldn't be overly stunned to see him go up in the Andre Battle Royal or some such.
They can't do this to me. Then I might have to start like paying more attention to the main roster. I like Velveteen Dream.
I'll tell you what, Raw has been so good lately, it's actually not that bad to pay attention to the main roster. This week especially. But yeah, I know that that promotion can sometimes be a demotion.
Well, okay, here's not to step on Justin and Tom's time. Back in the day in NXT, they used to bring people from the main roster down for short little stints in NXT, right? We saw that with Cesaro.
Yep.
Sheamus, Kofi, yep.
Yeah, could they do
Jericho
that?
Versus Bray?
What about Velveteen Dream in a short feud with Goldust?
Oh, my God.
Oh, God, that does sound awesome.
That sounds so beyond awesome.
The fans would eat it up. Goldust is somebody that doesn't get booed.
Yeah, for sure.
And the match itself would be cheered. Like, you would get a "This is awesome" chant before they locked up.
Yeah. Just think of those two characters, the promos.
Yeah. And Goldust will do that job. He's got, I know that he will. I want to say that he said something about Dream, but now I'm not 100% sure.
He's very active on Twitter, and this is super tangential, but he did, he and Montez Ford got into it a little bit on Twitter, I think just yesterday.
Oh, really?
Did you see that?
About the hair whip.
Yeah, exactly.
The hair whip heard around
Rose
the world.
Did the hair whip, and, he started doing the hashtag Rose Gold thing from the MMC, because he's trying to get that team voted in for the second chance, and that's definitely where my vote's going to go. But I think he did it by accident on first, and then he started doing it on purpose. He was misspelling Bianca's name and calling her Binaca, and Montez Ford came in, and they went back and forth. The only thing that went wrong with it is that Goldust didn't keep it going. He then said something like, "Oh, I'm only messing with you, kid." And I wanted the heat to keep going, even though it's not going to get a payoff.
The only reason why I'm aware of this is because Twitter sent me an email saying that Tom Stout liked one of these tweets, and so I got sucked into the Twitter rabbit hole.
Oh my God, I'm so sorry.
Like, this is the latest Twitter feud ever. You're feuding over who has rights to the concept of a hair whip versus a hair flip.
Two-thirds of my Twitter notifications are Tom-related. Tom liked this, and I was like, "Oh yeah, Tom likes most of what he sees."
With Velveteen Dream, probably shouldn't even bring it up because I am perpetually deliberating over this issue, and I don't have an answer for it, so I'm not even really going anywhere with this. But the talented heel predicament that you bring up, Kelly. If they want him to be a face, they shouldn't change his character. And sure, we may have seen a glimmer of that tonight because he cut what we would have thought might have been a heel promo, but then he didn't say anything that was in particular to what we didn't earmark it like, oh, definitely a heel because he said something against the audience or against Atlanta or whatever. Seth Rollins is a great recent example where we all loved Rollins when he was doing the chicken shit heel, running away from everybody, that annoying laugh thing. And then he comes back and we want him to be a babyface. But when he finally turns face and it's just sort of like this rah, rah, I'm a good guy now, everybody loves me and I love you kind of thing, he completely lost his identity.
It was a soft turn, too. A soft turn. And I can't stand the soft turns. They just don't work.
Yeah. So I don't know what the dynamic needs to be. But, you look at somebody like Bray Wyatt, and he's like, there's no way that guy's not a babyface with the reactions that he gets and the way that he's positioned to get those reactions with his entrance and so on and so forth. But he's always put up against baby faces and he's always made to say things that make him sound like he's better than everybody else and so on and so forth. So, again, like I said, I'm not even really going anywhere with this. It's just that is an ongoing issue that I'm constantly kicking around in my head. And yeah, we're there with Dream now.
I will just say that that is the best kind of problem for the company to have. Like, okay, if you don't know point. If you want him to be one of your top baby faces or one of your top heels, you're good either way. So,
yeah.
Good
point. Oh, man, we got another guy who's too popular. Damn it. Yeah.
Have him be a heel for a while. Now, yeah, hopefully they won't ruin it. But I can't remember the last time they had somebody who'd be a great heel and they wouldn't turn him heel. Can't think of the last time that happened. All right, so.
Oh, gosh. We've avoided right. talking about it thus far. I think my main takeaway from this, I acknowledged the acknowledgement of the crowd reaction to him. I think the other thing that I really took away from it was just the specific element of Dream's performance, in that he just owns every single room he's in, whether it's a little hallway in the back and he's just doing a pre-taped interview, or whether it's out there in center stage. Just every little, just when he pouts his lips, he just owns everybody up to the nosebleeds. So I'm all about it right now.
Patrick Clark is most definitely an intelligent guy, and that is going to serve him well for this entire career he's got going, because right now I see sky's the limit. I mean, this guy could have a rock style career. I really, really hope he does. But we talk about him a lot, and we obsess over him a lot, and I will call it a day for that. I'm going to get to a listener question. You can get a hold of us at pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. Andrew Gamble does that often, and he always has very good questions. This one, unfortunately, is terrible. No, I'm just kidding. It's, of course, another great question. I actually have obsessed over this one since I read it, because I don't know how I feel about this one, which is, again, sign of a great question. Andrew comes at us with this. On last week's show, you guys talked quite a bit about the UK title and the confusing situation going on with that whole division, but I want to know what you guys would think about the Cruiserweight division, primarily the Cruiserweight Championship moving to TakeOvers. Now that 205 is under the leadership of Triple H, it seems to have more in common with NXT than the main shows. I know the Cruiserweight tournament is culminating at WrestleMania, but I'd hate to see the Cruiserweight title continually relegated to kickoff shows and not presented like a big deal, a fate that seems far less likely to happen on TakeOvers. Andrew. So, once again, Andrew has provided a very interesting hypothetical here, because there are pros and cons, and before I burn them all, Harley, go ahead.
Yeah, this is a very intriguing idea. Definitely, you know, the Cruiserweights, getting Cedric Alexander and Mustafa Ali on a takeover, that match would be so much better than it would be on the Elimination Chamber pre-show, which is where the Cruiserweights seem to be slated, especially now that they're getting rid of the single-branded pay-per-views and going back to both brands on one pay-per-view.
Yeah, they'll be lucky to get kickoffs.
Yeah. So the quality of the matches on the TakeOver shows would be amazing. Setting up 205 and NXT as sister shows would be very cool for business, I think, in a way that Raw and SmackDown are, right? It would give us the chance for Johnny Gargano to go to 205, and then Champ follows him there, and we're all watching both shows, so we follow the stories and we know the characters. I think it would definitely be good for 205. The only issue I foresee is we're already struggling to fill to like get all our favorite NXT guys onto the five match takeover shows. The solution would be to extend takeover, I guess, make it a bit longer, maybe do a 3-hour show instead of 2.5, which I could see that happening eventually. It might be hard to keep up the consistent quality that we've had from takeovers the longer you get, because part of the conciseness of the shows is what makes them so good. That's my only fear, really. Otherwise, this sounds like a solid plan.
All right, Justin, what do you think?
I mean I like anything that brings some variety, you know, to our takeovers. I think takeovers great, but I don't think it's, you know, I think they've really hit the winning formula in so many ways. And I think that the NXT audience is, you know, you look at the way we've accepted the UK championship. I think that, you know, mixing the cruiserweights up in there, it's not gonna make anybody angry, I don't think. I certainly welcome it. I know that, you know, personally I avoided the cruiserweight stuff just because it had such a bad reputation, but now you look at who's going into cruiserweight stuff and maybe it's time for another look, and this is a way to get, you know, get that exposure to it.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to kind of piggyback onto something that you guys both hinted at. Having these guys in front of a crowd that makes more sense for them, I think would be a real boon to the cruiserweight division. I strongly felt when 205 Live started that it didn't have to be live, that they really should have just taped this show in front of the Full Sail crowd, who are so appreciative of just great wrestling, and have shown that they also knew these characters enough and were going to be on these characters' sides. I think you take that good thing that you already have and put these guys in front of the right crowd, and that way you can get them over and then grow them into the traveling group that they are. I thought that they got greedy way too early, and I don't know that it's too late for that. One of my snap reactions to this was, it's too late for that, but I don't know. Andrew might really have something here with the idea of, I don't know. I think it depends on who's in the match, because Brian Kendrick, a 40-year-old man, doesn't necessarily need to be on NXT TakeOver as somebody who's just kind of, unless they kind of change what NXT is, he doesn't necessarily belong on that show, as much as I love his heel act, and I really, really do. But I think given the right people, if you have a Cedric Alexander versus Mustafa Ali match or something like that, yeah, absolutely, by all means, put that on TakeOver, because it's going to play in front of such an appreciative crowd. Tom, what do you think?
Well, what I was going to say is that while I actually did entertain a thought like this during the Enzo era of 205, now that it's taking a new direction, I don't really want to mess with it. I want to give it a chance. And added to the detail that they haven't been on Raw over the past 2 weeks, I don't really know what to make of that, whether there just wasn't, you know, they did the gauntlet match. I don't know if it just was a coincidence or whatever. But anyway, that's what I was going to say. But after listening to you guys, you make very good cases. Everything you say is very agreeable. And although I wouldn't want to extend the length of the takeovers, I really like that in this world of 3+ hour Raws and 4 hour pay-per-views, I mean, I'll give me a 20-hour WrestleMania day, and I'll be happy with that once a year. But multiple times per week, it's a lot. I like that NXT is just an hour, or sometimes even a little bit shy of that every week. I like that the takeovers are slightly less of a commitment, and you know that you're going to get a good quality product crammed into a smaller package. Small package reference. Sorry. I wouldn't want to extend it, but you also mentioned that we've had the UK title matches. So maybe every other takeover, we get a UK title match. Every other takeover, we get a cruiserweight match. And although I'm not sure the kickoff shows on the main roster pay-per-views are really the kiss of death that so many of us think that they are, there's that perception is out there. And like you said, the audiences would much more readily appreciate what these guys are doing. I don't know if something like this, if it being like sister branded, would lead to roster cuts on 205 if they became overcrowded, because I would hate to think of that. I really, gosh, I like everybody on the 205 roster, but man, I was gonna say, short answer, no, I don't like this. Give the new version of 205 a chance, but you guys make some good cases.
All right, so with that, I think that's pretty well our show.
I was going to say, while we're on the topic of cruiserweights, 205 Live last night, they multiple times referred to Roderick Strong as NXT superstar Roderick Strong.
Oh, they're still doing it? I didn't pick up on that.
Yeah. So all our discussion from last week of him being done with NXT, I don't know. It might not be the end of things for him.
Okay. Interesting.
Just worth mulling over.
Yeah, I'd say, you know, I don't always notice those honorifics, and I should pay a tiny bit more attention to them. But that's where we are. Next week, we've got Shayna Baszler. I assume that this will be very important on the road to WrestleMania and to take over New Orleans. So, yeah, we've got that to look forward to. And I don't think there's anything more to mention. So with that, thanks for indulging us, all four of us dropping in to talk about the championship match. We probably won't have all four of us again until the TakeOver VIP show that we'll do. But we thank you, as always, for listening and for reading the torch. And we'll see you next week, gang.
PW Torch Livecast listeners, I invite you to get even more of what the Torch offers by becoming a PW Torch VIP member. Not only do you get ad-free access to our website, the mobile site, and the desktop site, and access to about 30 years of our archives, including over 1,500 back issues and thousands upon thousands of hours of our audio shows going back to 2004, plus tons of retro radio shows from the 1990s. But you also get over 15 VIP exclusive podcasts per week, in addition to ad-free editions of these PW Torch livecasts throughout the week. So we take the ads out of the PW Torch livecast for VIP members and then give you over 15 other podcasts per week, including what started it all, the Bruce Mitchell Audio Show. I host that with Bruce every weekend, and we spend a couple hours talking about the biggest stories of professional wrestling and wrestling history. It's one of the longest-running weekly pro wrestling podcasts on any subject, and it's one of the main reasons people go VIP and stay VIP. Another is The Fix with Todd Martin. I host that every midweek with Todd, and we get Todd's expertise and opinions every midweek on current events in professional wrestling, not just WWE, but all promotions worldwide, including New Japan. Plus, we end every show with some expert MMA talk from the LA Times columnist and SureDog contributor, Todd Martin. And there's so much more. The Every Single Day Weight Cutter Hotline with news updates every single day, Monday through Friday. And every Saturday and Sunday, I do the SE Editor format of the Weight Cutter Hotline, where I answer VIP member questions in depth. And there's so much more. There's the Wayback Playback with Pat McNeil and Jim Valley, Wrestling Audio Community with Sean Radican, the WWE Future Pass Show with scouting reports on prospects and a look back at the indie career of current stars, the PW Torch East Coast Cast Extended VIP Edition, the retro radio shows. Every Thursday, a new retro radio show from the 90s drops, from the early 90s or the Attitude Era. And last but not least, my in-depth Raw and SmackDown reports. You can get a full chronological rundown of every episode of Raw and SmackDown with my analysis of the show in depth every Monday night and Tuesday night. So check out details at pwtorch.com/govip. We give you a lot here at the livecast, but there is so much more. The vast majority of our work is for our VIP members, and you can become one today. Go check out details on a subscription at pwtorch.com/govip. Now